Okay, I'm going to introduce you to Esther, a friend we invited today to talk about Brazil because she knows a lot about it because she's coming from there. She's hanging around for a couple of years already in Germany and is doing an awesome, interesting PhD about DNA of bugs.
Yes, beetles.
And yeah, she's an anarchist. She's interested in anarchist theory and environmental topics. So that's how it comes, all of that together to the presentation today. And yeah, you have the word.
Thank you. So first of all, thank you for the invitation and thank you all for being here. So it's a pleasure. And that's a light in my face. So welcome. I'm sorry if I commit some mistake. I'm a bit excited, so nervous. But let's start this tema. That is not so nice. But August 2019, Amazonian forest burns. The smoke covers some cities in the north region of Brazil. Here you can see some pictures from some cities in the state of Rondônia. The fire could be seen on the roads. Here we have some satellite images from NASA, from 11th August 2019. So you can see some smoke fogs, smoke points in the states of Amazonas, Pará, Rondônia, Mato Grosso, also in Bolivia. And in 13 August, you can see more points of smoke in the state of Mato Grosso and Pará. And in this map, you can see the smoke river that comes from the north and goes through the south. Soon, the smoke river was formed. And the smoke river followed the southeastern part of the country and went to the most southern regions, going to the ocean. On 19th August, São Paulo became night at 4 p.m. A smoke fog covered the complete mega city, and it rained black water. Here you can see a satellite photo from NASA from this smoke river. How does it happen? So here we have some explanations from Bolsonaro, the president. First he said, it's normal. It's dry season there, he means Amazon. It's dry season there, that's real. And fire is actually a bit normal. But this was 200% more than what we have seen for the last year. And it was above the average of the years. Then he said something like, what can I do? There is no army there. And then he said that the environmental ONGs were doing that on purpose to incriminate him because they don't have money anymore. So can you believe that the environmental ONGs would put fire in the Amazon because they don't get finance aid anymore? So, but until there, the burn of the Amazonia was not in the international media, it was just in the regional media in Brazil. And some days later, when it arrived to São Paulo, it was in the media in the country, but it was not such a huge international appeal. But it changed. And then some explanations need to be provided. First, Bolsonaro said to a journalist, he means European, you destroyed all your forests, so which moral do you have to say something to Brazil? So apparently, this would be an explanation for something. And after attacking the media, he also attacked Macron, and they fight on Twitter. It was quite interesting, if you want to give a look. It was not easy. And he said that it's very sad that Macron wants to use this sad news of burning of Amazon to his own political interests. But I'm not going to talk a lot about Bolsonaro and his fights with other countries because of that, because Amazon is burning, and we have to ask why. I don't know why these lines appear here, so I'm sorry for that. Just ignore it. So, we can ask ourselves, why is Amazon burning? Natural cause, because it's dry season, and yes, there is a normal fire cycle, so if you haven't heard, there is a ecological field of studies that is called fire ecology. So fire can have, and has, a very important role to keeping biodiversity in some regions, in some biomes. But not huge fire, but localized points of fire, so natural fire, that occurs because it's dry season and the vegetation is very dry. But in Amazon, we cannot explain what's happening, what happened, just with this natural nature cycle of fire, especially because Amazon is a raining forest. Do you remember this? So why is Amazon so dry? Because of human cause. So we have deforestation. Deforestation is Amazon is huge this year. It was a record of this deforestation in Amazon again. And deforestation makes the forest drier. Why? Because when you cut the trees, you're having less trees to transpirate. The trees, they transpirate and they take the water at the soil and bring it to the atmosphere. And they create real atmosphere rivers, rivers that flows and control and organize all the atmosphere in South America and in the world. So when you cut the trees, you have less wet in the atmosphere, and it's why you have more dry in the raining forest. And it's why you have less raining. Burning trash, because burning trash is a kind of habit of some people in some regions where there is no a good management of trash. So these places, they accumulate trash, and there is not a good governmental organizing management of trash, so they burn the trash, and this happens especially in Amazon region, in the cities. But this cannot explain why natural reserves were burning. Burning land to create pasture, to put cattle, to create cows. This is very typical, and this can explain a lot, and we're going to give a look. So actually, this dry season in Amazonia is also connected to induced fire from farmers, because they want to burn land to create new pastures, because after burning a piece of land, a grass, a very fresh and green grass, will quickly be born. And so the cows, they can eat this very nicely. So a lot of people does it. Also to open the forest, to take away the forest to plant. But you have to remember that most part of the land who are burning are natural reserves, are natural forests, and also indigenous territory. So what's happening? Burning areas for agribusiness, especially for plant soy and having cattle. This is also part of this. We're going to focus more on this, every of these topics. Probably a mix of both. No? We can imagine it's dry season. Deforestation is a huge level. It's in a huge level. And people usually burn land to make pasture. So, of course, fire gets uncontrolled and it can be criminal. People can put this fire to criminally burn forests. But probably these fires in Amazonia has a huge participation of human caused. We have humans burning the forest, and we're going to discuss why. To remember it, I said this, the most part of the forest burned was part of natural reserves and indigenous territories. So here I brought some graphics for you. This first one, it's the rate of deforestation in some years in the so-called legal Amazonia. Legal Amazonia is the part of Amazonia that is let in the law recognized as the Amazonian. So you can see that we have a huge peak in 95, and this can be explained by this was the year of the 1 year after the Real plan, the new currents in Brazil, and they also started to get a lot of agricultural credit, of course, for big agriculture industries. And in, you can see the other big peak is in 2002 to 2005. This is known as the soy boom, and we're going to talk about this soon. And here you can see, it's the second graphic is fire count in the period of 2012 and 2018, and in red, 2019. So we have not finished the year yet, but we can see a very accentuated curve. So we haven't finished the year, but it's a red record. Yes? Put again? I can give you also the places where to find the other graphics. There are much more graphics also if you want later. But feel free to photograph us. So, but then we heard about the so-called the day of the fire. So in 15 August, a local newspaper in this region here that I put it on the slides, a local newspaper called Folha do Progresso reported that local farmers want to burn forests on 10th August to show the president they want to work. In this report, in this newspaper, the farmers were saying, we need to show the president that we want to work, and the only way is tearing down the forest. The only way to clean the forest and form the pasture is with fire. And you can see here we have a graphic from the region, from Novo Progresso region in the state of Rondônia, of Pará. And in Novo Progresso, you can see the fires, the number of fire registering reports in every day of the month. And after the 10th of August and 11th, it became even more accentuated, so there were happening more and more fire. This was just reported in this small Folha do Progresso newspaper, and it's not real clear what was happening. Was really that some people, some big farmers, they wanted to burn the Amazon. And here we're going to talk, but why these farmers want to burn the Amazon forest? Why people burn Amazon forest in Brazil? First, I want to show you the main cause of deforestation in the Brazilian Amazon. This graphic is between 2000 and 2005, and you can see that cattle ranching was the main reason. So between 65 to 70% of the deforested land were used to cattle ranching, mainly to produce meat. So Amazon is becoming a huge pasture. In the second place, we have small-scale agriculture. So in Amazon, the most part of the agriculture there is soybeans, is producing soybeans because the land is also not very well, not suitable for all many kinds of cultures, because the soil is maintained by the forest. When the forest is not there, the soil also doesn't have a lot of substrate and nutrients. So the forest, they keep the weather and they keep the soil. So something that grows in Amazonia is soybeans, and soybeans is something very important to Brazilian economies, because Brazil exports mainly soybeans. And the third was large-scale agriculture, and then others, and logging, to make wood, you know, to sell wood. And here, we have what I told you, the soy booms. So you can see that between 2002 and 2005, it was a huge a boom of soy production. Brazil started to produce a lot of soy, and this production of soy was related to a huge deforestation in the Amazon forest, because most part of the soybeans are planted there. But why so much soy? Can you imagine this? Do we need so much tofu and soybeans? Do you think why? What are we doing with so much soybeans? So about 97%, according to some research, say something about 85%. Soybeans are used to feed animals. So these soybeans are not used to human food, but to cattle, to animal food. So you have, in Amazonia, you have land that is being destroyed by produce meat or by produce soybeans to produce meat. And this is real. Here I brought to you the biggest exportation products of Brazil. You can see the iron ore is something very important and that Brazil exports a lot. And iron ore is also very connected to Amazon deforest and Amazon degradation, because a huge part of the iron ore reserves in Brazil are concentrated in Amazon area, and I'm going to show you some mines later. Then we have the soybeans, which is also a huge cause of Amazon deforestation. And then if you look here, you have exportation of meat. Of course, Brazil also eats a lot of meat, but it exports also a lot of meat. Here we have some photos of meat production in Brazil. So all these white cows, they are for meat production. The cows, they are treated like this. The cows that are used to produce meat are treated somewhere else. And this type of cow is used to produce meat. And here there is a map where this meat is usually sent in the middle. I have some graphics, but I didn't put here. But if you are interested, I have some graphics about the meat destination. So, and now we're going to talk about Bolsonaro environmental policy. Bolsonaro doesn't like environmental fines. He doesn't think this is necessary. So he is against all the environmental fines, you know, bills that you have to pay if you commit an environmental crime. He thinks that this is not necessary. Actually, he got an environmental fine in 2012 because he was fishing in a protected natural reserve. But he never paid this fine. He said that Brazil has an environmental fine industry that just destroys the men of the land. I don't know if he knows who are the men of the land in Brazil, but now he's planning to use this place where he was illegally fishing and it is a natural reserve, to create a fishing resort. Great, yeah? He's like a child. But I think childs are not like that. Okay. He promised during his campaign less fines for miners, loggers, and big farmers, especially in the Amazon region, so they could deforestate more and have less problems with environmental law. He wanted to finish the Ministry of the Environment, but after a lot of social pressure, he decided to fuse it with the Ministry of Environment, fuse the Ministry of the Environment with the Agriculture Ministry. But you have to note that the Agriculture Ministry favored the agribusiness lobby, so to fuse the Ministry of Environment with the Agriculture Ministry is to give the power of decisions to agribusiness. This is what's happening. He's also not really interested in found IBAMA. IBAMA is the Brazilian Federal Institute for Environment, and IBAMA is the responsible for protecting the natural reserves and to fiscalize all the environmental, if the environmental crimes have been committed, and to give the fines. Yeah? So he is not really interested in IBAMA. And he fired the director of INPE. INPE is the National Space Institute. It's a kind of Brazilian NASA. And he fired the director because the director of INPE, he made public data, he made data public, he made public data showing the increase of Amazonian deforestation for some months ago, a bit before the Amazon starts to burn. This director, he just gave this data to the media, and it was a big scandal that the rates were new records, and Bolsonaro fired him because he said this was not a patriotic act. And you know, of course, if you want to be patriotic, you have to lie to yourself and to science too. So, and he also approved many new agrotoxics to be used in agriculture. Many of them are banished in Europe and in the US because they can be heavily potential damage to human health. But now it's approved, so you can use whatever you want. And Bolsonaro has his environmental minister, Ricardo Salles. Ricardo Salles is the ex-environment secretary of São Paulo. And he was condemned by environmental crime, because he was faking maps to make natural reserves units a bit smaller. And as minister, Salles extinguished the Secretary of Climate Change and Forest, so it doesn't exist anymore, because climate change doesn't exist, right? And who cares about forests? Now I will teach you how to steal a piece of Amazon forest. This is a technique used by Brazilian landowners, so huge landowners. It's not one of us. And it's called grilagem. So you have to learn this word because it's important. Grilagem. First, so our grilagem tutorial. First, you have to be rich, because if you're not rich, you're not going to do this. You have to be rich, and you have to find public land without document, without an ownership document. What's not difficult in the Amazon region, because many lands doesn't really have, it's a bit unsure which land belongs to who, the lands that doesn't belong to someone, it belongs to the union, to the country. So you find this land. Then you falsify land's ownership document and make it seem that this land was belonging to your family a long time ago. So you pay someone, basically, to do this. And then you burn the land, because if there is no forest, there is no nature or protective law, and you can use this land as you want. So you burn this land also to say that your family owns this land for a long time, and there is no forest anymore there. And then you get the government to recognize your fake document, and then you make your pasture, you bring your cattle, and you continue to be rich. So this, in some way, of course I make it very simple, it's how grilaging works, and this is a huge problem in Brazil, because a lot of land, a big part of Brazilian land, was stealed by this process. So we can ask ourselves, was this fire in Amazon in 2019, was it part of an organized environmental crime with the goal of grilar public land, to steal public land? Because you have to remember, most part of the lands were burning were public land. No agribusiness land was really burning. So, we can ask ourselves, who owns the land? Or how I like to call it, property theft. And then I would like to remember with you a small little history. Once upon a time, there was land. An entire new world. This is an old map of American continent by Theodore Debris, I don't know his name. And some people wanted to colonize this land. And two of the sail nations who were really navigating and colonizing land were Portugal and Spain. And Portugal and Spain, so they knew that there was an American continent, they knew there was some land there, they wanted this land. And then we are not going to talk a lot about this piece of the history, but there are many financial interests and the starting of capitalism. I believe you all know this this history. But there started some kind of conflict between Portugal and Spain. So, in 1494, Spain and Portugal, crowns, went to the Pope, and they together, they made a kind of agreement. It's called Treaty of Tordesillas. And the Pope divided the world between the crown of Portugal and Spain. So the Pope and Portugal and Spain created this line, which is called the Tordesillas line, which divided the world between Portugal and Spain. Can you believe that the Pope divided the entire world between two persons? I will repeat, wait. The Pope divided the world between two persons. Yes, but then some decades after it, I think they realized that the world is a globe, and then they needed a second line to divide it into two. So the second line was done, and this was how God divided the new land between Portugal and Spain. The king of Portugal knew that he needed to colonize this land before other countries like England, Holland, other European countries that were really angry because the Pope forgot about them, that they would come and colonize the world. So the Portugal king had a kind of, you know, a line, and he like made lines. You see, in this part of what's Brazil, I'll come back a little bit. Oops, sorry. So this part was Portugal part, and the king take his rule, his lineal, and draw some lines, and he gave each kind of these lines to a noble Portuguese person. Great idea, right? This would work, I think. So you can imagine that land concentration in Brazil was really a huge problem, yeah? Because like first the world was divided between two people, and then it was a kind of 10 people was owning Brazil. So then we're going to talk about a little bit about land concentration and development of capitalism. So the capitalist development in Europe and USA, it had some kind of level, some level of land reform. And this was not because they were nice, it was because it was very important for capitalist development. In Europe, for example, in England and in France, we had many peasants' revolts, especially in the Middle Ages and so. And during this the capitalist development, the bourgeoisie made a kind of agreement with the peasants against the feudal lords. And this resulted that there was some kind of distribution of land, you know, not equal, not for all, but it was a little bit more, and this was also important to create internal market. So now, I would like to compare the development of capitalism between Brazil and US, and see some points about land distribution and land concentration. So in the US, I will start in the US, sorry. The US, there was, during the Civil War, you can see that the northern bourgeoisie was against the enslaved landowners of the South. So then you have the typical bourgeoisie that would become the industrial capitalists against the typical landowner or the feudal lords, the most kind of. The North wins, and they create the Homestead Act. And the Homestead Act created some level of land reform, some level of land division in the country. With the end of the war, there was the end of slavery. Slavery was very important for the landowners of South, but didn't make a lot of sin for the bourgeoisie, the new bourgeoisie in the country. And it creates, this division of land creates a kind of internal market. And we have the classic rupture between industrial capitalists and landowners that was very similar to what happened in Europe, as in England or France, for example. In Brazil, there was no land reform. There was no focus on creating internal market. On the contrary, the focus was always on exportation of agricultural products and raw material, especially first sugar, second coffee, and third meat, more recently. So the landowners, sorry for this wrong, the landowners, they became the industrial capitalists. They was not fighting against them, they became them. And there was no rupture between these two segments, but a conversion. As a result, we have no distribution of land, there was no land reform in the capitalist shape, and there was the longest slavery of the world, and the land's monopoly is really high in the country. And I think in the South America, it's a bit like this. So, less than 1% of landowners in Brazil own 35% of the country's rural area. Men are ahead, of 87% of the establishment, representing almost 90%, 95% of farms. Large farms with over 9,000 hectares concentrate 43% of agricultural credit. What it means is that these big landowners are the ones who are receiving finance to agriculture in the land, not the small farmer family, but the agribusiness. Do you understand what I call agribusiness, right? Or should I explain better? Agribusiness, I mean the big agricultural industry. So, okay, large farms are being more financed, but the small farmers' families are the responsibles for over 70% of food production. Who is producing food are not the big landowners, are not the latifundio, are not the agribusiness, are the small farmers' families. Agribusiness does not produce food. Agribusiness, what we call in Brazil, is latifundiários, latifundio. They have also historical conflicts with small farmers and indigenous ethnias. So if agribusiness is not producing food, what they are producing? I think you get already what they are producing, right? So, a story called about land reform discussions in Brazil. In the 40s, there was already some kind of proposals of land reform based on European and US-American acts, but there was no implementation. In the 50s and 60s, there was an increase of popular pressure for the so-called basic reforms. The basic reforms were not just land reform, but there were political reform, there was some kind of economical reform, it was a package. But land reform was one of the most important topics inside of it. In between 1946 and 1962, there was the foundation of the so-called Ligas Camponesas, that you may know as peasant leagues. So the peasant leagues were kind of land workers' union for land reform. Sorry. They had communist and socialist base, and there were some communist parties involved organizing and helping, so being part of the so-called Ligas Camponesas. As, for example, PCB, Partido Comunista Brasileiro, the Communist Party, they demand, land reform in a more socialist shape, not just this capitalist reform, but a socialist idea of land reform. They started in North Brazil, but soon they had sales through the entire country. They started more like a workers' union, but there was a kind of radicalization of the movement. And they started occupying land and to have clashes with the police. This was in 62, yeah, that the Ligas Camponesas were a bit more organized. And what we had in 64, we had the coup d'etat. Coup d'etat, sorry, I don't know how to say this. Pretend I say it correctly. So, in 1964, the leftist president João Goulart, also called known as Jango, wanted to install the so-called basic reforms, this packet of reforms that we already talked about, that was including also some land reform. But in right wing, they know that leftist groups were well organized in Brazil in the time. For example, the Ligas Camponesas, and also others. And, you know, they were still traumatized by the Cuban Revolution. I forgot the name. The Brazilian right wing was really afraid that some kind of a communist socialist revolution also occurs in Brazil, and Brazil is a huge country, so it would be a big problem for them. They would lose all their Griladas, the grillage lands that they already had. So, the military coup d'etat in 1964, they did this military coup, so they took the government, the military took the government in March, starting April, 1st April 1964. And they said it was to avoid the communist threat in Brazil, and it was supported by the USA. And then this day, it's known in Brazil as the day that lasted 21 years, because they said they would take the government just for one day to avoid this communist president that wants to make land reform. But actually, they stayed in the power for 21 years. So this is called the day that lasted 21 years. And the military dictatorship started attacking the Ligas Camponesas, the peasant leagues. So the Ligas Camponesas were persecuted, many members were imprisoned and also murdered. And between 1962 and 1989, about 1,566 rural workers were murdered, and they had to withdraw the fights. So they were forced to withdraw. But they stayed in the rural resistance against dictatorship. And in Brazil, we talk a lot about the urban resistance during the dictatorship time, but there was also a huge rural resistance during the time. And these people were there. Actually, I wanted to go a bit further. This this part of the history, of course, you can imagine, is really huge, and there are many topics to be talked, but we are going to make it short. After 1980, with the so-called redemocratization process, some modern versions of the peasant movements were created, and the one of them, it's not the only one, but the one of them, the biggest one and the well-known one, it's called MST, Landless Workers' Movement. And the Landless Workers' Movement, they have a very Marxist base, so they are also very influenced by the workers' parties, by PT, the party that was in the government before Bolsonaro. There was also the impeachment of Dilma. Dilma comes from PT. And it's a party that started as leftist, and we have a lot of criticism about this party, of course. But this is also something that is said, that this movement is also so connected to this party when we analyze this with an anarchist point of view, because this party uses many times this movement. They are for popular land reform, and they also occupied land as the previous Ligas Camponesas, and they occupied non-productive farmer land. And they fight to have this land for its family. So there are many different, so MST is really huge. There are many families inside of it. Some families, they already got some land, some we call the asentamentos, and some are still fighting for it, and they are always occupying other land also. And they do a lot of different kind of acts. They do a lot of different kinds of activism also, but they also produce, so these families, they produce about 70% of all the food in the country, and they are the biggest producer of organic food in the country, and they have many kind of food street market. So if you go to Brazil one day, you may see some kind of food street market, and they produce, they are not 100% organic, but they are starting to become even more, and I think they are about 80% organic. There are many other modern peasant movements, but I'm not going to cover all of them, so I will just show you an example. There are some other movements that are more autonomous and not so directed close to parties, but we are not going to see it in detail. And we have also the indigenous movement. So the indigenous reserves, they have very well preserved forests. The forests inside of indigenous land are the ones that are more preserved. While the deforestation rates in Brazil is about 20%, if you look just inside of indigenous land, the deforestation rate is about 1.9%. And the indigenous people in Brazil have a lot of conflict with miners, lodgers, so people who want wood, and with the agribusiness. And there are many deaths. It's very violent, these clashes and these conflicts. Bolsonaro's government wants to reveal the extension of some indigenous land already regularized. And he also proposed many times the economical exploration of indigenous land and natural reserves. Here we can see the March of Indigenous Women in Brasilia this year. Just to illustrate. And as I told you, the mine industry is going even more in the north, in the way of north. So the largest iron ore mine in the world is located inside of a natural reserve in the Amazon forest, and it's called Carajás Mine. Bolsonaro government also wants to explore a huge copper mine area called Renca, in a protected region in Pará, Amazon. There are also some indigenous land there. And another mine is also being discussed. It's a niobium mine in the indigenous reserve of Raposa Serra do Sol in Roraima, also in Amazon region. I don't know if you have seen in the media the disasters or the problems with the mines that have exploded and killed some people and destroyed some village. They are all iron ore mines. And iron ore mines are concentrated in the state of Minas Gerais, where I come from, and the state of Amazonia. And in the Amazonas region, not just in the state of Amazonia. And as I showed you, iron ore is one of the most important exportation products in Brazil. So, of course, they want to explore it. And niobium, I don't know if you have already heard about it, but it's a huge discussion because actually Brazil is already a bigger producer of niobium and the market doesn't need a lot of it, but Bolsonaro thinks that it's a good idea to destroy a huge part of Amazon forest to produce more niobium. Also, when a lot of experts already told him that if he does it, the niobium price would be very low because a lot of niobium would be available to the industry, and the industry used just a little bit of niobium to work with iron. So they just need a little bit. They just need a lot. But Bolsonaro said that it's still a good idea because we can also do jewelry with niobium. So, to finalize, I wanted to come back to some questions of the land. At the beginning, I wanted to go more into Brazilian fascism, but I imagine it would be very, very long, and I imagine that you already know a lot about fascism and how it developed, and I imagine Amazonian and ecological questions are a bit more important. But we can do this another time. I would be very happy. So I'm not going to go to the history of fascism, but let's do some comments. First, I wanted to make very clear, to say very clear, that agribusiness does not feed the world. The huge agricultural industry, they are not feeding the world. They are producing soybeans and meat and killing us. Capitalism is not just producing what we need. Actually, capitalism is making us need things that they want to produce or that they can produce. And there is no green capitalism, unfortunately, if you want to think about it. There is no green capitalism. Capitalism is the opposite of a green idea. We cannot change it to make it green because it's not just local, it's a global thing. And capitalism needs to give products to one, capitalism needs to destroy a huge place. And if it's not happening here and it's happening there, if not happening there, it's happening there, someone needs to pay the price. And this is capitalism. So there is no green capitalism, there is no way that we can reform it to make it more ecological. And there is no sustainable development inside capitalism. Land is equal to autonomy. We just have autonomy if we have land, if we can work with land. We can have our own way to work with land. And land autonomy should be a human right. I don't know if it is, but if it's not, should be. Because we have the, not just we, but all living creatures that live in this planet should have the right to get their living from the planet without destroying it, and without creating ecological disasters. We can do it. Protect nature is fight capitalism. We cannot be okay with capitalism and trying to protect nature at the same time because it's not how it works. And we have to fight capitalism also in its fascist shape and not just trying to reform it. Coming back to Bolsonaro and Amazon, yes, Bolsonaro, he represents nowadays the austerity and fascist face of capitalism in Brazil. He is the well-known fascist idiot from Brazil, right? Can you say other name? I beg not. So, and Bolsonaro wants, yes, he wants to continue the capitalist plan to conquer the land, because land is autonomy. If land does not just belong to capitalist purpose, we don't have autonomy, and great, no? And to do that, capitalism will destroy forests, will burn the Amazon, will burn all the forests, indigenous peoples, small farmers, and all other alternative or so-called traditional ways of existence and production, until it just leaves capitalist production, and we can just live inside of what they planned for us. And now, of course, Bolsonaro, he has this plan, this horrible environmental policy, but do you think he came with this idea alone? Of course not. He just represents capitalism now, and it's what I wanted to make it very clear. Bolsonaro is very well known as an eccentric character, and it says that he was crazy, like Trump. Trump and Bolsonaro, they represent what's happening in capitalism right now, as also AfD represents what's happening. So this represents a new fascist wave, a new fascist rising in these austerity times. He is not just a crazy character. And this is, I think, it's very important to say, because if we just make it a point, Bolsonaro is crazy, of course he's a jerk, but Bolsonaro is crazy, we are not seeing the completely structure that led Bolsonaro to be the president. So he did not come with this idea alone. He represents capitalism now. And most part of this trend of destroying the nature and to capitalist purpose, could be seen in other former governments, right? Bolsonaro is doing his part in the moment, in the historical moment, that it's everything is allowed. And of course, he's a jerk. So this is what I wanted to bring to you. And I'm really curious if you have some comments or questions or discussions.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I have the microphone, so if anybody has a question.
Thanks a lot for the talk. Very insightful. I just remember before the elections, there were some newspapers in Germany reporting that Bolsonaro is like the candidate of the market, which was something the Deutsche Bank was saying. Do you know anything about how banks, in especially German banks or from the US, also profit from this new type or this increased destruction of Amazon? So not, I think it's not only the rich people of Brazil who are profiting from it, but I think there is some international support from other institutions. Can you, do you know anything about this?
No, of course, the profit of destroying Amazon is not just Brazilian profit. A lot of capitalists in all the world is profiting. I cannot tell you one bank, the name of one bank that is profiting from it. I do not know. What I know was that I think SPD was supporting Bolsonaro a little bit before he was in his campaign. And soon they said, oh no, Bolsonaro is horrible, and don't help Bolsonaro, don't help fascists, it's like what they're supporting. So I know more this relationship between SPD and Bolsonaro. Also, they helped his son to organize some propaganda from his, like some advertisement for his campaign. But a specific bank, I cannot not really tell you, so I'm not sure, sorry.
More questions?
Do you believe Bolsonaro will be re-elected?
Oh. Yeah, Actually, this is a question that I ask myself sometimes. But what I have seen is that some people that vote for Bolsonaro are really disappointed with his government. But I have not seen researches, opinion researches, to ask how much is his popularity. I read that his popularity at the beginning of his government dropped a little bit, but I don't know how intense it was. Actually, I will better respond this question because I'm flying to Brazil next week. So I really hope I can get a better idea of what's going on and if Bolsonaro can be re-elected. I hope not, of course. But many people really advocate for him, and he has a huge fan base. Like he's a YouTuber, as you know. Bolsonaro is quite a YouTuber guy. And he has a huge fan base, and many, many people vote for him. Many people believe that Bolsonaro will correct Brazil, but more in a more moral way, you know. Because I think many of social movements, they got stronger in the last year. So the feminist movement, the LGBT movement, there were many more laws for example, domestic women that work in house for rich people. The middle class, the rich class hated it. So this, they advocated a lot that this was a destruction of the ethical and moral values of Brazil, and all this religion appeared. So, and Bolsonaro always, he put himself as the guy that believes in God and makes everything for God, that wants to keep the values and the moral and this ethic high. So many people just, I think they just see that, you know.
So you went a little bit into the landless workers movement, but what else do you think is happening in terms of resistance, also in terms of ecological resistance, and what do you think are the best sort of strategies to approach this new sort of like fascism and also like the ecological destruction?
Good question. There were some protests, and people were protesting for Amazonia and against Bolsonaro. There were many kind of protests. And Brazil is one of the countries that killed more environmental activists. So the number of environmental activists that were killed in Brazil is really high. And to really go to these areas, to the Amazon region, or to areas that really have a huge conflict between miners, loggers, and agribusiness, and native people, MST, is really, really violent, very violent areas. So I think the ones that are not doing this are many kinds of ONGs, and it's why Bolsonaro also hates ONGs, you know. If something happens now, if the light goes back, Bolsonaro will say that was an ONG, so he really hates it, because I think they are the ones that are doing something. So the foundations are not there, so the Amazonia Foundation is at risk, so we don't know how much money we have to the IBAMA and the CMBio people to go to these areas and do their job. And a kind of autonomous ecological, there are many kind of ecological movements, but I don't know how effective it can be, and how can we arrange, so can we be strong to be against that, because it's really a huge power that these people have. And autonomous ecological movement, I don't know many of them, but more like MST is huge, and others like Greenpeace and WWF, this kind of movements. I don't know others. A lot of others I don't know, really know. But how we can make it work. It's a good question. I think we have to really have more this culture of being involved with environmental fights, because actually when we live in the cities, we sometimes we don't have a lot of, don't know a lot about it, and you don't know what people are doing. I also don't know everything, what's going there. And also, we don't have this idea, so we cannot help them. So a lot of people are dying there, ecological activists and so, and we don't even know. But sorry, I cannot answer your question.
Is there a hand or?
I think I've read something about the Bolsonaro regime also being connected to evangelical Christ, like Christians, but in a really radical way. Can you tell something about that?
No. Yeah. These neo-Pentecostal religions are very strong in Brazil. They always become stronger. So, and they have this idea of making like kind of evangelical pursuit. I think it's very connected to this question of morals, that the moral, the ethic is being destroyed by the minorities movements, and they have to keep this moral high. So in Brazil, there are many in the parliament, there are many Congress people. They are directly related to church, and churches are huge industries in Brazil. So they don't pay fees, no? And they have a lot of power. So they go deep into people's head, and they also do, like, for example, now all the drugs against drugs institution are commanded by religious people. So it's not the social service that is doing the anti-drugs work, like taking the people that are really addicted to drugs and helping them, but the church doing this. And of course, they does not do that, but they also catechize people. And I know many people that went through drugs rehabilitation and became really religious fanatics. It's kind of scary. But they have a lot of power. They have many, for example, television channels. Many television channels are owned by church and also industries. And they have a lot of Congress people inside of parliament that are priests and that come from this church. And in Brazil, there is this, people say that there is this big Congress people group that is the bullet, Bible, and cattle. So they work with cattle, bullets, because many of them also have connections to militias and to military and so on. And also Bible, so it's very important there. I don't know exactly, I forgot which church Bolsonaro belongs, but he always brings this church discussion, this religious speech. All the time, a bit like Trump.
Okay, if there are no more questions, then we call it the evening. And I think, you have a question.
A short question at the end. Do you have any social media channels where you can get some information from you about this topic? Yeah, because you have a lot of information, I think.
Thank you. So for me, I don't really use social media, but you can, if you want more information, I can give you some indications of medias, but they usually are of Portuguese. So I have to. One place where I read very good political analysis, but not really from this environmental part, but more like Bolsonaro and also the impeachment of Dilma and how the impeachment of Dilma is connected to Bolsonaro was on crime thing. They have really good analysis. So some people from Brazil, they also write texts for them, I think, because some texts I have seen in other anarchist blogs. before and they went to crime things, so they have really good material. And about ecology, I can give you some links later, but I have to think about it.
Regarding your question, I have one tip. It's a journalist, which is actually a correspondent, a free correspondent in Sao Paulo. He's called Niklas Franzen, and he has a Twitter account, and he tweets regularly about news from Brazil regarding indigenous movement, women's movement, and problems with the government.
I have some, like a kind of, I prepared a kind of links. It's not very well organized, but if you want, if some of you can just copy this from my computer. There are some links, some tests in Portuguese and some tests in English, and from some different blogs, from some anarchist blogs, from some normal newspapers. So if you want, you can also copy this in my computer.
Okay, then thanks a lot for your talk again. And thanks for all of you being here. I think you will be here a few more minutes if some more questions pop up.
Sure. Thank you.